aggressive, a lot more entrepreneurs, you know, and so yeah, I was just like, I'm just not gonna live in New England, man, because you know what it was is like, not only in medical sales, but people have so much money up there, but they are the most miserable people I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like I'm in Bali, and I hear from multiple Balinese people that they make on average $120 a month, and like literally there's no savings.
Yeah.
Like 85 or 90% of it goes to their family compound. The rest goes to rice, and they have pennies. It's left over. You know what I mean? They are literally expunged by the government. Yeah. And they're the happiest people I've ever met in my life, dude.
Yeah, that's probably one of the strongest realizations that I had in life was, you know, I come from being Latino. I come from that sort of lifestyle, that sort of living. And when you really stop to think about what a human being is, and the fact of the matter is that we're survivors.
Yeah,
we're absolutely survivors. Our biology is designed to be able to travel hundreds of miles, you know, walking.
Yeah.
And without having any sort of issue, and all we really need is food and water and some shelter, that which we can build on our own because we're gifted.
Yeah.
In our cognitive ability. And so, and I don't even say evolutionary path, because we've been in our current form, in our current brain ability, we've been this way for 100,000 years.
Yeah.
And so, what has happened is that, you know, society forms, and along the way, we became infatuated with complexity. And complexity gave rise to society, gave rise to education, this and there, and to eventually economy. And we have forgotten about where we really came from, which is just the simple truth is that we're fucking survivors.
Yeah.
And those people who are out there in Bali, who are in Costa Rica, who are in Latin America, who are in countries of third world, what we call third world, or developing nations, they're happier than us.
Yeah.
They're happier than us because what do they have? They have their basic instinctual needs met.
Yeah.
Food, family. You know, the essentials.
Yeah.
And their life is simple.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Yeah. It's like they're literally living in just cement huts with grass ceilings.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them don't even have beds. Like, I remember I was in the Philippines, and this family invited us into their house because that's just how they are. Filipino people are probably some of the most amazing people I've ever met. The Balinese, too, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like, guys, like, trying to feed me everything. And, like, I'm like, there's no bed. For a bed, and I'm like, holy shit, these people sleep on like the sidewalk, but with a roof.
Yeah,
it's insane, man. And I'm just in it, and it just made. I was journaling a lot when I was over there. I was just writing every day. I'm like, what do I, you know, the only reason why I want to produce mass wealth, is because I want to help other people. That's my biggest thing. Like, like I want to start a foundation for underprivileged kids where they can, I can send them on trips where they learn. Things, places they would never go, you know, Hawaii, Bali, wherever it is that I ended up doing. But, dude, the kids, like, there's so many kids, like myself. I grew up in a poor neighborhood. All my friends were Latin, you know, or black, you know. And I'm like, my parents were just as broke as their parents. That's all they talked about, you know. And I'm like, I want to help people like that. People that I know are massively intelligent and creative but have no options. So they turn to drugs. They turn to...
Yeah.
Guns, they turn to, you know, all this shit that
things that happen in the inner city, you know. There's so much talent out there,
and it's not even just the inner city, it's these farm towns too, man. These kids have no clue what's out there in the world. They're clueless. And you know, their parents are just like, oh well, you gotta work for the farm, let's follow on that same path. But then you have this kid that's like, this isn't my path. Give me a ukulele or notebooks I can write.
Know? And that's something that I think has been now more than ever been made possible, but finding something that you're really gifted at and trying to do that. And if you do it well enough and you just stick to it, you enjoy the process, you see that long-term vision, it'll push you through. And it's more true now than ever, it has ever been. I feel that way, that no longer have to follow just that one path. But it's still, it's a tough time because it's, you have that signal, and then that same signal is also mixed in with all the other fucked up shit that's happening. You know, all the, you know, you see these, in the same time frame, you have artists. You have people who really just want to do and live a simple life and share it with others so that other people can do it themselves too. And then at the same time, you have, you know, and I hate to bring this up because I don't like talking about it, but like kids like Lil Pump and like Lil Yachty and that sort of entertainment, right?
Yeah.
And it's mixing in together with it, and it's just it's a hard time to live.
Yeah.
It's a good time to live, but you do need some interpreters.
You know what it is too, man? Is like what I realized too, especially from this trip, is and from learning a lot about yoga is Americans, specifically Americans. I don't think it's as much in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Is we are taught that there is a path. You finish high school, you go to college, you get a job, you find a woman, you marry her.
Yeah.
And they wonder why the freaking divorce rate is 70-80%. People are completely fucking miserable.
Yeah.
They are unhappy with their jobs, even if they're making millions of dollars a year. You know, I was a JP Morgan dude. I mean, I was right across from Barclays Bank. I was right across from Jay-Z Studios.
Yeah.
All these people I'm meeting with every single day, dude. And I'm seeing deposits monthly, 200 grand, 170 grand. They're making more than people are making in over 4-year periods in a month.
Yeah.
I was one of them. I did that too, you know? And they're just depleted, man. Mm-hmm. I remember this one guy stuck out to me, Will, for the rest of my life, because I wish I kind of had gone to work for him just to meet him and like or establish a relationship with him. Mm-hmm. He's 32 years old, managed one of the hedge funds upstairs, and had no family, no wife, no kids, nothing. Just 32 years old. Freaking guy would come in with like ripped jeans and like $100,000 watch. And how I knew it was $100,000 watch because I'm a watch kind of sort.
Yeah.
I didn't want to say anything.
I mean, I could see a Patek Philippe and know that it's worth.
But dude, all he whatever. Had with us, all he had with Chase, was one checking account earning zero interest with $32 million in it. And I would always tell him because I knew our biggest commissions were made off referring to the financial advisor and getting those deposits in.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, dude, why don't you just throw some money in a mutual fund or a muni bond. Saving your taxes. And he's like, Matt, and this guy would literally come at lunchtime and wait like 2 hours only to talk to me. He would not talk to anybody else. Mm-hmm. That's how I knew. That was the first time I knew. I was like, I'm special. Like, there's something about me that people really, really like, and nobody can replicate it, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, Matt, why don't you come work for me? And I just saw, I was like, this is probably going to be the dumbest thing I turned down in my life. Like, something about me. I've always had a really strong gut feeling. I was like, you don't want to do that, Matt. You're on a path. You just started. This is your first job out of UConn.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, because he just looked empty, man. Like, and he's like, Matt, I got like triple that in my actual fund that I'm running upstairs. Well, get this. Before I left, he came down. This was 2008 when the market crashed. He came down and he's like, I lost it all.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And I was like, thank you, God, universe, whatever you want to call it, for telling me not to go and quit my job that I was doing so well at.
Yeah.
First job out of college and go work for this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, dude, it's insane, man. If you're open-minded, whatever you believe in, God, universe, it doesn't matter in this regard, but if you're open-minded and you just do your best every single day and you pay attention to signs from the universe, God, whatever, your life will be massive. You know what I mean? Whatever that translates for you. If it's a sailboat, if it's a $5 million in checking account, whatever it is, and I've noticed that. I'm like, from a societal perspective right now, I have nothing. I am renting a room for my buddy in Denver. I don't have a job. I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have a house. I don't have, but I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life.
Yeah, I think him and I are on the same path. I just recently, over the last 6 months, started a relationship with a girl. But for the most part, I mean, if you look at it from a social standpoint, I really don't have anything.
Yeah.
I'm renting. I have an old truck, this or that. But as far as I know, and the presence that I have, because I'm a photographer, I do photography and video.
Yeah.
And the presence that I have is like people are constantly always hitting me up, like, "Hey man, like keep doing what you're doing, like you inspire me, like it's so cool, like to see someone doing what they love." And and to me, that's just like that means more than any amount of money.
1,000%.
Yeah. And it's like, because I know that eventually, like, my ultimate goal is to actually shoot for National Geographic.
Thank you, yeah, Joe, yeah, for catching me. 100%. I was like, wait, are you playing my mind right now? Am I just high? I don't know what's going on.
By the way,
but you're right, and that's what we learned in this book too. But
I'm super open. Yeah. Like, it's pretty much impossible to offend me.
Yeah, no. Yeah, absolutely.
And
it's one of those, like,
yeah, it's the small little,
the
yeah,
small.
Thank you for catching.
It's one of those little 101s.
Yeah, and it's not because, like, I for me, the reason why I say that now, and I keep always reiterating it and bring it up, because I did have a problem with money,
yeah,
and having some sort of belief that I didn't have an ability to earn it, and so it became a coping mechanism at first for me to say it's fairy dust, therefore I don't need it. But yeah, now it's become so strongly ingrained in me that I have abilities that, just like you said earlier, that make you special. Now really I'm beginning to see that if I'm affecting change in a revolutionary company like Tesla,
yeah,
there's some fucking something about me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now, but now, and I still yet feel the same way about money.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's not necessary, because it really is. But when someone attaches their worth to it, that's when it becomes poisonous.
So this
is because you're literally putting your worth,
yeah,
on something that an arbitrary object. To somebody, yeah, like, say, okay, well, why isn't this key worth? Why aren't we basing our worth based on keys? Well, that makes, yeah, no sense. It's a fucking key.
Oh, I've personally struggled with this.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, well, why is this cotton triangle, or not triangle, but rectangle, then affecting the way that you feel about yourself?
So this is what I'll say. So my challenge that I was going to, yeah, say, before he restructured my thought process, I read
yeah,
a ton of books.
I mean,
40 books a year.
Too much
and help. I can't remember which book, for some reason, I don't know why, but I think this was the only thing I took from that book, was writing a letter to money, because it's not about, mm-hmm, money. Money's not fairy dust and it's not paper. You know what money is it's energy. So if you look at it as energy,
time exchange.
So what I did was I took a notebook and I wrote down a letter to money.
Mm.
Thank you, money, for providing me with the source to get food, to nourish my body. Thank, mm-hmm, you, money, for allowing me to travel the world, to open my mind and experience others and, mm-hmm, see smiles on people's faces across,
yeah,
25 countries. Thank,
yeah,
you, money. You know, so it's all about how you treat money. And that's how I believe everything in life. Everything in life. And I've gotten a lot more spiritual. I wasn't really 2 years ago, but since going to yoga and doing a lot of breath work and meditation, mm-hmm, like, everything is energy. So if you treat if you treat money with an energetic space of positivity and abundance, mm-hmm, money will come in massive amounts. But if you, mm-hmm, treat money like a place of lack, like where I was when I was unhappy in my medical sales position,
yeah,
your job gets ripped from you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The other thing I was going to say is that, yeah, like, you know, it's like, so you guys know why money was brought into our world, right?
It was a way of it was bookkeeping, essentially, what it was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you haven't read that Homo Sapiens book,
mm-hmm,
it's long, but really, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So basically, actually, I don't know if you guys knew this, but there were 6 species of Homo Sapiens. The reason why we beat the other 5 is because we were just a height up with our intellectual capabilities,
mm-hmm,
which is what you said earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, the over the process of time, and I didn't know anything about this stuff until I read that book. So again, let me say it again: read that book. It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really, really well written. But yeah. So we basically beat out 5 other species of humans,
yeah,
that were on this planet to win. And then we had to kill off everybody, which is why we invaded Australia, New Zealand, Europe, and...
It was our ability to strategize.
Our ability to strategize,
yeah,
and we wanted power.
And that happens in a point of evolution where we develop a specific area of our brain that gives us that conscientiousness,
yeah. Yeah.
Which is quite interesting.
Exactly.
That it was just that minor advantage.
That was it, man. Otherwise, dinosaurs would be ruling the world. Otherwise, there'd be 6 species of humans running this world around. Some would probably look like apes, and then there'd be us,
yeah,
which would be, you know, wearing a Tesla shirt and a pair of Nike sneakers. You know what I mean? But
yeah, it's very true. And you know, like, even until very recently, I did struggle with the concept of what money meant to my life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I stumbled onto a right feeling, and now I'm just beginning to validate it.
Yeah.
Where I did put my worth and who I was as a person in the amount of monetary gains that I could make,
yeah,
whether it was actual cash flow or objects of worth, of tangible worth. And that really fucked me up.
Yeah.
I'm like, I was fucking shy as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I can talk to you. Like, maybe, yeah. Like, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been just a mute. I would have been really quiet. I didn't have any, I would have no input.
Yeah.
And as I transitioned to that, and I was able to detach myself from money. And so when I say money is fairy dust, I'm not saying that money is literally fairy dust and it's not worth anything.
Yeah.
But it should have no bearing in the way that you feel about yourself. Because if it does, at that point, you're limiting yourself in the ways that you can make it.
And you know what that means to me?
Yeah.
Is you have to take control and make sure you're zipped up in place. Because we have control over everything in our life. But the really, to where you get the big power from, and what this is what you learn in yogic philosophy, you know, is releasing that control. Because now... money isn't a gain or fairy dust or whatever energy. It is just money. It is separate from your body.
Yeah.
You are separate from your body. I am not Matt Shaker. I am a body and a voice and a spirit and all that stuff. And I know that might be a little bit too woo for you guys. I don't know.
No, I mean, there's a great quote by Alan Watts that says, you know, like, people forget that we're part of the Big Bang.
Yes.
And so when you come at me or I come at you, we don't see it as the universe just manifesting itself in energy in a particular way, which is you or it's me. I know that's exactly what you're saying. It's like, you know, you or I or him or anybody else in the world, we're just part of the same energy.
Yeah.
And like when you are able to realize that, it sounds metaphysical and this or that, but
it's the truth.
That is the truth. You know, we're just a fucking trillions of atoms.
Yeah.
Talking to you in a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's the truth.
It's true.
Any scientist will agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a very scientific mind, and so same thing. And when I realized that, I was able to then detach myself and let go of certain controls that I had to put in my life.
Yeah.
I had a lot of controls in my life. I had to get this. I had to do this. I had to do that. And earlier we were talking about how, you know, in America we're taught this, and that, and it's really just an assembly line of life. And we're assembled to be robots, except we're worse because we act like computers who don't even know that we're computers.
Yeah.
And it's shitty. And so when people don't realize that, that's when you have huge suicide rates. That's when you have mass shootings. That's when you have those types of things. It's crazy.
Yeah. And that's and like I said, when I was in middle school and high school, man, when I started to like play basketball and I started to be really good, I started to hang out with a lot of rich kids. And I'm like, man, I want to be like them. I want to have their money, you know?
Yeah.
And you see on... you know, MTV, you got to drive a Mercedes to be better and cool. And so I chased money too, man, which is why I chased these positions. And like, there was nothing stopping me. I was a bulldozer and it was great for my success. But you forget, like what you said earlier, I had the same issue. I put all of my value in money. When I would go on dates, dude, I would tell girls what I made right away. And they'd be like, and I thought it was like my way of like getting them.
Yeah.
They were like, fuck you, dude. Like, you're a douchebag. And I'm like, why are my relationships not working? I couldn't see out of my own bubble.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, dude, all you do is talk about how much money you make. And I'm like, and it took me a while. I didn't start being able to change that.
Did people tell you? Was there like a friend who was
Oh, my best friend, Chris. He's like, dude, he's like, you got to tone down like what you talk about with your life. And I'm like, well, it's just me sharing my story. He goes, no. He goes, people find it offensive. They don't know you like I know you. He's like, you got to tone that shit down. And it took me a while, and still I struggle with it. And I'm 33, you know? But I toned it down as of like last year. I was like, oh shit, I really got to stop telling people because it's affecting my relationships with everybody.
Why do you think it would do that? Like, talking about money that way now in like, in reflection.
Why do I think it would do what?
It would like make people feel uncomfortable.
Oh, because I think people are naturally jealous. I don't think people are like you and I, not your average person, you know? People don't want to see other people do well, generally speaking. They don't want to see other people doing better than they're doing, you know what I mean?
Do you think, and what else?
And I think people are genuinely unhappy in life. I really don't think most people, in America,
for instance, when you were speaking about like money and so forth, and it wasn't working in your relationships, it wasn't working in... your friendships or other people, and your friend was giving you this advice, hey man, don't talk about money in this way or don't share this. You believe that it was because when you say those things, it makes other people feel jealous or uncomfortable or this and that?
100%. Yeah. Yeah, and I've gotten this affirmed to me many times. You know what I mean? And it's, I don't think people don't like to talk about it because they don't have the right relationship with it. You know what I mean? And, yeah. And again, it's like back to that book.
And right is relative in terms of like the relationship to money. Because we were talking about the people from Thailand.
Yeah.
And their relationship with money, that isn't something that is a factor in their happiness. If you went and gave them $100, it's not like they'd probably be elated for a second, but that's not going to change their overall state of existence and being. Whereas some other people definitely do, you know, associate themselves with that. And then back to when you talked about it and people didn't respond to it well. Yeah, it may be that because they're jealous, but also it may give them some false preconceived notion about you.
True.
Because some people who come from not a lot will say, oh, that person's got money, they don't understand. Oh, they don't know what it's like to struggle to be like me, this and that. Yet they don't know about the pain that you dealt with because you're chasing money and you don't have your social relationships good, or because you're chasing this to, you know, get significance or to impress your parents, you know, to get love.
Yeah.
And so they don't know. It's bad on both sides.
It is. There's no right.
And so I think to consider that, you know, we don't question someone like Mother Teresa, the value.
No.
Even
don't.
You know, like,
unless you're a straight up villain.
And Mother Teresa was like having this conversation, but like, I don't know what she would say. But like, no, money's not important. We wouldn't be like, nah, Mother Teresa, you ain't got the right mindset about money. Like, it's energy. It's energy. It's what you can do with it. She's like,
yeah.
What do you mean? Like, I'm making a difference. Like, we're all here making a difference. Like, her power was her influence.
Yes.
Her power was her words. And
but you know what her power was?
The way that you feel about money, like the way that when you talk about money being energy, I translate, if everything you said, if you replace that with influence,
yes,
I would agree.
But even more so, even deeper than influence, you know what Mother Teresa was? Is she's centered. Like that, again, going back to that yogic philosophy, I am not suffering, I am not my body, I am not my brain, I am purely energy. Like, I truly believe, whatever, I don't even know what her belief was, but I truly believe in when you are so stable in self, you can go at something and it's not going to rock you emotionally. It's not going to rock you physically. That woman probably could have had her arm snapped off and she would have just been like, how can I look at this from a positive perspective?
That's, it's called, I was reading about it in a recent, it's called having an understanding your metaphysic.
Yes.
And that is where, what is at the worst of the worst, what is the one thing that would make you happy? And it's usually your thoughts.
Yeah.
And that's as having an understanding of your metaphysic where, like, you know what it is. Like, no matter what, like, everything else that happens in your life is a bonus.
Yes.
And until your life extinguishes, life itself is a bonus, and you can always see it from the right side.
Yeah. Like, my teacher that came to our yoga teacher training to teach us yogi philosophy for a week, that guy literally was a professional soccer player for India, and now he does retreats and teaches about old yogic philosophy. Mm. And I'll tell you what, that guy, I bet you any money, if somebody shot his wife in the head in front of him, he would just be like, he wouldn't be fazed.
Yeah.
He'd be upset, but he would not be fazed.
And then,
it's crazy, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
That is actually a mental disorder. Not reacting.
Is your bathroom open by
to trauma like that, there's something wrong with you.
Let me correct myself. Not reacting. There would be a reaction, but it wouldn't affect.
You're saying he would
spiritual center.
He would be back. He would be okay.
Yes.
Yeah. He's as strong as that's normal.
Oh, dude, it's locked.
I just walk around in my room. Okay. Let's see.
That's late.
You get in there? All right. Yeah, I was like, no, I can't agree with that.
We look at, because we were just talking about sociopaths and psychotics.
Oh, yeah.
And neuropsych. And the interesting thing is when you show a person who images of somebody in getting hurt or in pain with the sound, there's specific parts of the brain that light up. Mm-hmm. And that's you feeling it to a degree. It's just normal. Like, there's no way you can. That's why people kind of get off on watching those stupid videos where people are like getting hurt, jumping off of things.
Eating shit.
Yeah, it's like, those videos never made sense to me. I didn't like people seeing skateboarders crash or people breaking their arms. Or...
Oh, but the really bad ones, not the goofy ones. But like ones
funny ones, yes.
Yeah, but like the ones where they literally fucking have bones sticking out and shit.
Yeah, but there's a lot of them too where like these old people got hurt recently doing this teeter-totter thing. And I was like, what the heck? And it was like, some of these people probably really got hurt and people are joking about it online. I'm like, that stuff never was like satisfying for me. But this interesting thing about sociopaths, differently than regular humans, and I was just saying to kind of refill you in, when you show people images of other people getting hurt and or audio of other people in pain and anguish, there are certain areas of your brain that light up.
Oh, hell yeah.
When you show somebody who is schizophrenic or... actually, I take that back. It's not schizophrenic. It's sociopathic.
Yeah.
Those parts of the brain don't light up.
Yeah,
and part of it's because they have inflamed parietal lobes and they get bigger and bigger over time. And so it, as you get older, they start caring less and less about someone's emotion. So think about a kid who's poking somebody and doesn't care that it hurts them or that's hurting animals. And you're like, what the heck? Well, that's because that part of the brain isn't saying, hey, this isn't good.
Yeah.
Because we're a mirror, you know, that whole energy thing. Like, when I hurt you, it's hurting me. That's a natural... That's part of nature.
Yeah.
We don't want to overtake from itself. Nature doesn't take more than it needs to.
Yeah.
And when it does, it dies.
Yeah. Bad things happen.
Or one part of nature dies.
Yeah. It's like earthquakes, hurricanes.
Checks and balances.
Locusts, right?
Yeah.
Like,
if locusts eat all the grass, the locusts die.
Yeah.
And then the grass grows back.
Yeah. It's like bees stinging you. They die.
It's a system of checks and balances.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
And the humans are going to be checked.
Yeah.
Yeah, eventually we'll... Yeah.
Dude,
we're killing our own planet.
I recorded this message to my great-great-great-grandkids if they were able to somehow redeem this, like an audio clip that I was recording of myself. And I had said, I won't be surprised if there's only 2 billion of you guys left, like humans. And maybe none of my my offspring survived. But there's somebody listening to the audio I was talking about, and I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, rather we went up to 14 billion and then drop, like, boom, back to, like, 2.
Well, you know what's going to happen, man, and I don't know if we'll be alive for this, but it's going to, everything goes in cycles. I believe there will be another massive world war because people are so disjointed and disconnected in this world still. That it's creating separate, more and more division, and people are going to start blowing places up. You know, I hope it doesn't happen, but I truly think everything is cyclical, and if that's the case, where we go from 14 billion to whatever billion, it will because of some kind of mass destruction of sorts.
Yeah, man, it feels very uncomfortable, and I almost feel like the whole energy got a little uncomfortable the way you guys are.
No, I'm just literally not.
I'm just cold. So I just wrote down billions of deaths. And you're laughing. Like, this is what we're talking about. Like, could really happen. Like,
there will be a third world war.
Yeah.
If we keep the society as it is now. Just nations.
Well, you just can't work.
And resources divided and subjugated and this or that. But
the ideologies that are growing.
Yeah, but it could also just flame out if we become more open about what we identify ourselves with as far as nationalities.
Yeah.
That could totally. If all of a sudden everybody's a global citizen, then who the fuck are we going to war against, right?
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, the global
economy. That is a beautiful idea, because there's a whole other utopia where we have 20 billion people, and now we're not...
Well, We're all interconnected.
We're not American. And maybe it starts with us being, we're North American.
Yeah.
And then maybe it starts with, oh, we're from the European Union. And maybe it's, oh, we're from the Asian Union. It doesn't matter that you're Filipino or this or that, right?
Well, that's
and
what
And then
kinda...
we become human freaking race.
And we have that
planetary
ability.
Species.
And we have that ability now.
Well, some people do. I mean, I believe I'm a global citizen. I don't identify with being Lebanese, French, Irish, German.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. Like, we have that ability now, and we have the tools by which we can disseminate that idea throughout the globe in our various forms of social media. Unfortunately, right now, though, is that we're at the very early discovery stages of it. And right now, really, we're just finding about it on social media, and this is what Facebook has been facing now in... that we're really just learning about all of our quirkiness, and a lot of that quirkiness manifests itself through perceived racism, bigotry, fascism, this or that, but it's really not that. And the people who know it, the people who see the power behind it, are using it to influence it in a way that we think that that's what that is. You know, when we hear about things like fake news, it triggers a certain feeling in us. Because we either hear it as fake news and we're with Donald Trump, and everything that we see against us is fake news, or we hear it as fake news and we're over here on the left, and everything that we, you know, and we think that fake news is used as a moniker to insult us and our knowledge and how we feel about ourselves. But in reality, what's really happening is the fact that the people who know this and see this and have seen this coming know that that is a way to just completely control it. Everybody, left or right. Left or right.
And look at the race before Trump became president.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, Facebook was a night. I couldn't even go on.
Yeah.
I was like, these people are brainwashed.
Yeah.
And this stuff isn't even real.
Yeah. It's so insane.
You know?
It's so insane. And it's like, really, you find one quirkiness. Literally, it's like, oh, cool. Like, oh, that guy's kind of like a jerk. But we're going to spin it in a way where it says... white person or black person did this, and so therefore it's going to affect this entire race should be pissed off, and we're going to be able to actually monetize that, because we're going to be able to drive extra traffic. And now you have Russians coming in like, oh, these fucking guys, all right, we're going to be able to do
this.
Did
you hear about the story that Hillary Clinton is the one that created Black Lives Matter and funded it?
There's so many crazy stories out there.
And I truly believe that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Like, I try not to be. But I look at the way that influence works.
Yeah.
I look at the way that people who just have a little bit more, not knowledge, but just experience. Yeah. And it just, it's like, it's a trolling effect.
Mm-hmm.
You can literally troll yourself into power.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Trump did.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, and because you're so able to easy. Once you're able to trigger emotion in somebody.
Well, dude, that's what Obama did too.
You can control them.
You know? I mean, dude, Obama said, I read all his books. I think it's fascinating. It says Obama was not a U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in Kenya,
mm-hmm.
which therefore denies him the ability to become president.
Mm-hmm.
How did he become president?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was black, half black.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the smartest people in his class at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Chicago to enact massive change with
mm-hmm.
no money in the worst neighborhoods ever,
mm-hmm.
got noticed, used that to affect a feeling, an emotion in women, in mass quantities of minorities,
mm-hmm.
black, Latin American, all these
mm-hmm.
other people that are supposed to be not white, and I don't even
mm-hmm.
give a shit. That's why I'm quoting it all, because it's stupid anyway, but... And he became president, and,
mm-hmm.
and that's why people overlook the fact that he had a long sheet form saying he was not born in America.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter, man. Power is power. If you know how to build an audience,
mm-hmm.
you can get the funding, you can get all this other stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like me, man. Like, you know, as minuscule as my life is in the grand picture here. You know, like, I got a job in medical sales that I should have had 10 years of experience. It was required, but I got it because I evoked massive interest from my energy that I put out, from
mm-hmm.
what I was doing,
mm-hmm.
from a undying, crazy hunger like Tony Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's, like, the same thing with Trump. I mean, I don't really like Trump. I think he's a fucking idiot.
But
he's a smart dude.
He's not dumb. The fact of the matter is, like, he's not dumb.
No.
There's a lot of dumb people out there, and he's not one of them.
Yeah, and that's why I laugh at these people that get so caught up in his Twitter. It's like, He's probably not even running his Twitter, and if he is, it's purely because he's using this. He's six steps ahead.
Is there a picture or a video in existence of Trump with a cell phone and his fingers on it?
No. No.
Have you ever?
I doubt he even has a phone, dude.
No.
Probably. Well,
like,
he might.
This has to be researched.
Yes.
Has there ever been footage of Trump using a cell phone?
Hey, man, Twitter fingers are trigger fingers.
No.
What if there isn't? What if Trump
doesn't
know?
Dude, you just found your homework
know?
Assignment. Congratulations.
How to use a cell phone. No,
so
I got to put, like, John Oliver's people on
it. And it's so funny because, like you know, it. People are so easily influenced. It's just crazy to me. Like, people, even like Elon Musk, right?
Yeah.
His whole fucking life is you know, first he started at PayPal and this or that, but now, like, the stock of our company can get affected by a series of words that he says on Twitter.
I know. That's insane. Same with Trump.
Yeah, same thing with Trump. The whole feeling of an entire country, of millions and millions of people and potentially billions across the entire globe, gets affected by the words that come out of one person's fucking brain.
Yeah.
As though this person really can understand the entirety of humanity.
Yeah, right.
And, like, people get so offended.
Ooh, I would really like that kind of influence.
But you know what I think too, Luis, though? This is what I kind of keep coming back to. Is if you're so centered in self and so...
Yeah. Oh,
100%. Have such a vast understanding of what we really are, how
yeah.
microscopic we are in the grand scheme
yeah.
of the universe... You should not get hung up on something like that.
Yeah.
It shows to me that humanity doesn't have self-worth. They don't have passions, hobbies, etc.
Mm-hmm.
They have no mission in life. They have no why. They have no true north, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
People are so lost
yeah.
and so in just
yeah.
enveloped in drugs and media and bullshit.
Don't you believe that's
addiction.
Natural? With evolution and where we're at in our process?
It has been natural, but I think it's more animalistic, instinctual than anything.
Right.
Because animals have been shown to be able to, like, to seek fruits that are fermenting to get that drunk feeling, or cats with catnip to get high.
If they can overindulge, they will.
They will. However, the thing that has given humanity the evolutionary step is the fact that we ponder our own existence, we ponder our own future, and therefore, we have the ability to supersede those instinctual parameters. And the fact of the matter is that a lot of us choose not to do it through a process of logical fallacies, as in, like, you know what? I'm going to eat that burger because I know that tomorrow I'm going to work out. And then tomorrow comes and you're like, I'm not going to work out. I'm going to hang out with my friends because I'll work out tomorrow. And we always discount our future possibilities for immediate gains. That's animalistic. That's instinctual. However, we have the ability to.
That's our version of survival of the fittest. Because we're not getting chased by lions anymore.
No.
We're not hunting elk. You know, we are purely just having an immediate need, desire, want, and an undeniable attraction and energy towards it. And it could be the worst thing. I mean, I was victim of it. Freaking using cocaine every night, knowing that I was gonna feel like total shit. I was gonna sleep awful. I was gonna wake up and be miserable for 2 days, and I was and I'm like, why did I keep doing it? Why did I keep doing it? Because, like he just said, that instant interest, that desire, once it inputs in your mind, it is untrainable, and you let it own you, as opposed to you owning it and letting it brush by like a cloud in the sky. You know. It's what you learn through meditation and mindfulness and all this stuff. There's a reason why these people have been doing it for thousands of years, and why our universe right now is actually shifting from the third to the fifth dimension, which means we are all becoming more inquisitive about self-awareness, about self-identification, about meditation, mindfulness, breath work, all these things, because we're like, wait, whoa. Now that we're seeing mass quantities of people that have everything miserable, committing suicide, cheating on their wives, husbands, beating their kids, whatever it is, because people are starting to become aware. We're starting to slowly make a shift to a broader awareness. So I feel like, you know, you got to get on the first train on that, which is why I'm doing what I'm doing, you know, because all of this stuff is just energy and information and molecules being fed to us, and it's all about what do you really want to look at this, or how much power do you want to give this?
I think, Matt, like, it's the information, like, as you're speaking to that, and the information is the power to change, to know that you can do better, that beating your wife, as you said, is not the right way to live, or there's a better outcome. You know, there's a whole idea that you or I or Luis could have been one of the people who was persecuting the Jews if we grew up in that environment and were told the beliefs, taught from the people and had the parents that they had, right?
Yeah.
That we aren't that much different. It goes back to what you said in the very beginning, that we're all the same, we're given the same types of talents or gifts. And I agree that to a degree.
Not talents and gifts, characteristics and...
characteristics within a respective, you know, some people are really good at, you know...
Oh, yeah, athletics,
or so that we get it.
Well, the,
you know, the people are born in different economic situations, whatever, but the point is we're all generally the same. We're all human.
Yeah.
Right? Like...
We're all chromosomes and atoms and molecules.
Yeah, and there's a lot of peace in that, and I believe that we could, in the next 50 years, have a leader who is speaking in this tongue, communicating that we are all the same. We're energy.
Yeah. You look like a Latin version of Alan Watts.
Really lucky, you know, to be alive, to be in existence. Like, there could be a world leader who's speaking on this kind of realm.
Yeah.
And inspiring the masses to accept that global citizenship.
To deny
these nationalistic ideas that move into states of hate, and to rather like put on a badge of like, we are human, we can do better, we can accept one another and understand and grow. Mm-hmm. That can happen.
I think it will. Honestly, I was sent this article by this chick, and I know she came into my life for two reasons, and I believe everything is just the universe now that I'm kind of on this path. She gave me the name of my business, and then she also gave me the awareness. She sent me this article that I read that said our universe is shifting from the third to the fifth dimension, and you see it, and it's like, it is happening, and that is a good dimension. We're shifting upward in our understanding, our awareness, our curiosity. We want to know more. We are, you know, the technology, I think, is a double-edged sword. We have it all, you know, which is helpful because we're learning at mass quantities and we're learning at rapid succession like no other human has ever been able to experience.
I think you can call it whatever you want to and like the way that you believe it, but this is evolution. We reverse engineer our existence as a species and go back to the five hominoids that you were discussing. And, and when we talk about our societal evolution, as Luis was discussing earlier on, if we were to project moving forward, we could call it natural evolution. That people would become more conscientious because of technology, because of... And we could estimate, based off of our biology and our history, and probably have a good number of guesses. There are literally futurists... evolutionary biologists and physicists and chemists, and they all work together in these war rooms, so to speak, and just hypothesize what the future will be like. And it's a lot of exciting and or very scary realities.
Well, here, I'll postulate the scary reality, because I for me, I think it to be the truth, and it's liberating for me.
Yeah.
Is that this walnut that I'm eating right now, it started its life as a seed that was fed water, metaphor for ideas. It grew into a tree, metaphor for growth and potential. And then gave fruit, which is birth for biological offsprings and fecundity and reproduction. And now I'm fucking eating the motherfucker. And he will no longer exist.
And he's not going to have any offspring. And
no, it does exist. It exists within you as nutrition to feed your bones, to keep you alive.
Yeah.
In this metaphor, that's exactly that I never reached my potential.
From the perspective of the tree, why the fuck did I just go through all of that if some motherfucker just ate me? Right? I didn't live my life to feed another organism, right?
Dude, why does the squirrel get hit by a car so the hawk or the whatever can come down and eat it? I mean, it's all the circle of life, the balance of humanity.
This is a scary idea I'm going to talk about.
Yeah.
Or maybe pretty controversial, but...
Oh, I don't get scared. I like these conversations.
I use the wrong word for scary, but... I saw the squirrel the other day. I really hope I didn't hit it. And I didn't even look at my tire. But, I just kept driving for days, avoiding my front right tire. But this dumb squirrel... Not where he should have been. I was like, bah, 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 bah. and he's just out there looking to the left.
Dude, it's like the deer
looking
to the right.
He's looking at me. And I'm like, man, the squirrel. And I don't know what happened.
I'll tell you what happened. It's called the circle of life, man.
And you know they say survival of the fittest, right? Yep. Or what's that? The Darwin Awards?
Darwin Day.
No, have you heard of the Darwin Awards? someone gets hurt. Or, there's videos of people getting hurt, or, they die, but for doing something stupid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lighting fireworks in their butt or something.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that guy wins a Darwin Award,
That's awesome,
Survival of the fittest.
Dude, that's the crazy thing. That's what survival of the fittest is nowadays, man. It's health, and it is tied to money, too. Because if you're in poverty, your life is proven. You will not.
If we're talking about Darwin's context, yes. When he said, because this is very misquoted.
Talks about the developing world is reproducing at a much faster rate than the developing world. So, if we continue the way we're going, in about 100 years, the developed world will actually start experiencing a decrease in population, which for biological purposes. That is not survival of the fittest.
No, absolutely not. Because as you speak to earlier, to the fecundity rate, our society is not producing as many offspring, right? We got to start having 5 or 6 kids.
Because everybody cares more about money and success and buying a seventh
home. Than having kids and nurturing relationships, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I was just thinking about this the other day. Because people in other countries, from what I've heard and looking at the internet sphere, are not seeing America as the best place to live. It's not the funnest place to live or the most place with the most opportunity. That is long gone. Mm-hmm. The places where you can thrive and raise a family, people don't want to come here.
Dude, I'll tell you what.
No. How weird is that? I'm accepting this as a young adult that when I grew up, this was the place. And now I'm accepting, oh, man. Oh, no, this is not the place to most of the world. And we're a very small minority. We're only 330 million.
Well, dude, I'll tell you, just from my experience, and again, this is just my perspective, my opinion, but I just did 13 countries in 6 months, and I'll tell you what, I was not looking forward to come back to America, because I'm I'm spending more to live a life of pretty much misery with all the stuff that I think I should buy and have, all these materialistic possessions, and I'm where, and there's no fulfillment. Right now, I'm completely unhappy. I was happy as hell when I was traveling. And I'm I'm spending less, and I'm going to write a book about this, actually. I'm spending less to travel the world to all these tropical places like Bali, New Zealand, Malaysia, Philippines, all these places than it would be for me to live a boring lifestyle in Connecticut, which is not L.A., San Diego. It's not a hot spot. It's not Miami,
Dude,
it's
people are doing it by the masses now. They're just... and setting up trees and planting them online with these little businesses and able to live off of very little income. You can make $700 a month online passively and live somewhere else.
See, my friend Emily, who I just met up with last week, who was at my yoga teacher training in Thailand, she was coming through Denver. She lives in Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. She teaches online. She makes $800 a month, and she is surfing and doing yoga and teaching English.
and eating the best dishes. We went to Costa Rica last July.
It's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable. She's
so
like,
happy, everybody.
Dude, she's like, I'm going to Bali in the fall, and I'm going to spend like 3 months in Bali or 6 months in Bali. Like, she's truly, you know, again, like going back, we get taught that you, in order to make money, you got to be massive wealthy. And I'll tell you what, man, I, 2 years out of college, I was still at JP Morgan before I left for medical sales. My best friend, Mike, went to Princeton, was like working for Citi investment banking. And the kid was addicted to cocaine, completely miserable, wanted to kill himself. And he had everything in the world because we don't get taught self-love, self-care, fulfillment. We don't get taught that in school. We get taught, hurry up and go get a job so you can buy that house you can't afford, so you can buy that car you can't afford. And oh, by the way, you're going to upgrade that house to a house that's going to put you in deeper debt. And you're going to do this, this, and that. And you're going to marry a woman because you're lonely instead of marrying a woman because you're actually in love. And this is the masses, man. And this is, that's, they don't do that in these third world countries because they are not getting trained this stuff.
That's such a sad story. And it's interesting because I think that was like more, that was a story that I heard over and over and over again in my experience with KFM and making these calls. Because, I mean, I spoke to over 1,300 men.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Like, on intense degrees, and I was like, and I was converting these, you know, these individuals and prospects and so forth, but that was just a very relevant story. Yeah. That I'm caught in this money, I'm made these decisions for the wrong reasons, because I'm living off of this narrative. And it isn't as prevalent in other in maybe many other countries. Luis was just telling me about Rome and how overindulging in
entertainment, food,
becomes a detriment to your society. And that's what is happening now, and we're repeating in America.
Dude, there was a time in my life where I would be so excited to go out to eat. Now, I don't even look forward to it. It's actually, dude, I've gone back in time. Now I look forward to cooking dinner.
Yeah.
Like, I have no interest in going out to eat. It makes me sick. You know, it just shows you what overindulgence does.
And you know what? And you know what? It ultimately boils down to, and I was just saying about it right now as he was speaking, it's presence.
Yep.
And it's about presence, because when other countries as more desirable, because we're not present like we used to be.
They're balanced, dude, and that's what it is, man. No. Like, honestly, I remember being in Monaco, and I went out. I went there for the Formula One race when I was traveling, and when I lost my job with that company. And I would see these guys, and they'd have a Lamborghini, but they would have a flip phone. They didn't even know how to text.
Yeah.
Because they were so present in their world over there, because it's such a different mindset. The guy didn't look at his phone the entire night he was with us. He was with us for 7 hours.
Yeah.
You know, took us to dinner at his pizza restaurant after. I mean, and I just looked at it, and I'm like, this dude has a Lamborghini and a multi-million-dollar business, but he's using a flip phone. He is, and I never saw somebody more present in my life. And I'm like, holy cow, these people live differently. They don't live to work. They work so they can live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they work. That's why they get all like a mandatory 7 weeks off in the summertime every year, same time of year. And that's why they when they work hard, but they don't work these 10-hour, 12-hour days that Americans are told to work to be just good enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're taught respect and moderation. And that's why they can drink, go out and drink, and they don't go out and binge drink like Americans do. The whole lifestyle,
it's all a calculated decision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, I'm going to go drink. I'm going to go drink this or that. It's conscious. It's presence.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's what we don't have here. We react to things. That's why people get offended. That's why people binge drink. That's why people overeat. That's why people spend, you know, on impulse. And it's because they're not taking charge. They're not present. They're, you know, like, someone says something that, a quotation in quotes, offensive. Oh, I'm a fucking offended. Why? Why are you offended? Oh, because you said this about me. Why does that matter to you? Oh, because I correlate with this person. Why? Why does that matter? You know, like, why? And same thing. It's like, why do you want to buy that? Oh, because, you know, it's going to be sick. I'm going to be fly. Why does that matter to you? Oh, because I'm going to be like, people are going to be like, ugh. Well, why does that matter to you? And once you reduce it to it, I was like, oh, shit, like, I guess it really doesn't, right?
It's what we do in coaching, the magic three. Ask the same question three times over.
Yeah.
And that somebody just pops, dials right in to their source, you know. Same thing, yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, that backpack that's over there on the ground, I call that, I have my entire happiness in that bag, and it's just my camera equipment, you know. For me, just being able to create my art, shoot photos, video, that's all I need.
Yeah.
That's all I need. Literally, like, I travel that thing everywhere. And I don't need anything else. Everything else is a bonus. Everything else makes me happier.
That's awesome.
Not happy, but happier.
That's a good perspective, man.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. That's great. I think everybody should have that perspective. And it's kind of like me. Like,
yeah.
Right now, it took me a long time to get to where I'm at now. But now, I never get upset or mad.
Yeah.
I'm always happy. I'm always positive.
Mm-hmm.
And if something affects me, I shift my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What is this? What am I seeing in myself?
You acknowledge it.
Yep.
And then you let it go.
That's it. Yeah.
So, acknowledge it. All right, cool. Fuck it. I fucked up. I was fucked up.
Yep.
And let it go.
Yeah, it's a hyper awareness, but it should just be awareness for humans. But it's hyper awareness because we are staring at this screen all day, thinking it's going to give us the answer to life, or we are, you know, entertaining ourselves or overindulging ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I've been intermittent fasting lately, and everybody's like, "How do you only eat from like 1 to 8 or 1 to 7 p.m.?" And I'm like, easy. It's all we do all day long, every day, is overindulge. Our bodies can go 2 weeks without food.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, think about it. Hunters and gatherers, they took them weeks to get a kill, and then they'd have food for, you know, whatever, 14, 21 days.
And that's why, like, when you start the conversation, like, you know, we're survivors. As ultimately it comes down to, we're fucking survivors.
And our body is still trained to handle that,
mm-hmm.
but we keep discarding it. Because we think that to be happy, you gotta go to that restaurant. To be happy, you gotta go to stay at, you know, Ritz-Carlton or Marriott.
And we have a good friend. We have a good friend who's kind of going through the process of doing that. Like, he is still very much stuck in, like, I wanted, like, this is my threshold, like, of comfort, of luxury, of, like, this is the experience that really matters to me. And he's about to break through and figure it out. But it's like, it's crazy when you see it. It's like, dude, like, why do you want to go to this bar? Why do you have to go to the fancy places? Oh, because, like, why? You know, same thing, why? It's like, bro, like, that same drink could cost you half the cost or probably even less somewhere else. And your overall experience won't shift.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I've kind of...
It's why I'm becoming a life coach, man.
Yeah.
Because I want to help people uncover what they already know inside, but just can't get... They can't look at, you know, they see darkness, you know. You walk through a tunnel, you see darkness.
You think that your life experiences change you?
Yeah.
I know, I think, recently I've started to think that it doesn't really change you. It's just that it adds a lot of fluff to your life to where you forget about who you really were.
Yeah.
And but once you're able to break through that and see past the fluff, you've always really been the same person.
See, what I think it is, this is my perspective, is what I think it is. I mean, especially because I was fortunate enough to be able to travel for 6 months with just a backpack and stay in hostels and, like, strip bare. You know, most places didn't even have running water.
Mm-hmm.
And what it made me become is hyper-aware.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm hyper-aware. Now I'm like... Oh my God, I gotta get rid of all this stuff I need. I don't, you know, I thought I needed it one time. You know, and like, I feel like we get bogged down. We have like this, this aura of shit.
Yeah.
Which is the media, which is traffic, which is social media, which is our phones and all these things that are designed to make us addicted. So we stare at them all day, you know, but when, like, going back to what you said, if you bring yourself back to presence, to the moment, the only thing that matters is the moment. The past has no significance. The future has no significance.
The
moment is the only time you can enact change, you can fall in love, you can do anything. All is possible in the moment.
It's the only part that's real.
Yeah.
And exactly. And it's the only part that will ever be real.
Yep.
And it's just the truth. And it's hard for a lot of people to conceptualize that. Yeah. But it's true, you know, I'm not going to throw this key at Joey in the past or in the future. I'm going to throw it to him now.
Just kidding.
No.
And, If this recording goes live, he didn't throw a key. It'd be really cool to like fake those like moments.
I should use something more dramatic. I should like this like, fucking like, said, like bowling this. Ball or something.
Right. That'd have been a different sound. This is something I've been trying to figure out how to articulate because you guys are touching on it recently. I've literally done a couple of recordings and like never posted them about how I was like feeling a certain type of way in the morning. And then, you know, I forced myself to go on that run.
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, by the end of it, and, like, listening to some, like, positive words and motivation, like, I'm, like, trying to, telling myself, no, I'll be grateful, like, even though I'm, like, having, like, stomach issues or, like, mm-hmm. you know, not feeling good or not wanting to be up. Like, it's just a complete shift. And then I like, feel so much better going to work. Like, I have a different mindset. Like, it really does dictate your... It can dictate so much of your... moment, you know, you can change it. Tony Robbins talks a lot about it with the whole strategic intervention. Like, somebody can really be like depressed, and then they can really go to being really elated and happy mm-hmm. within the course of like 2 minutes mm-hmm. with the right emotional control and priming. Saying, let me think about things I'm really grateful for, change my physiology, change what I'm saying, and like talk myself out of it.
And there's a really good trick for that when someone's like really in a negative state of mind. Ask them to name 11 things that make their life really difficult, and then ask them what are 5 things that make your life really good. You're going to have a really hard time.
You know what we just did today? It's crazy.
Wait, hard time doing what?
They'll have a hard time coming up with 11 things, but they'll have an easier time coming up with 5 things.
Easy.
And then it triggers something in their brain with like, ah, shit, maybe my life isn't too hard.
So one of our coaching activities, they say if somebody comes in and you're down in the dumps, what we learned today, they said ask... immediately say, what do you want to work on today? And then write to it. What are 2 things that make you really, really happy?
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
Tell me 2 things. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Instantaneous switch of perspective, mm-hmm. switch of perception.
You know? And you always go smaller with what makes you happy and then larger with what doesn't.
Yeah.
Because it's just a mind trick.
Yeah.
Like, if you're forced to come up with...
Human beings are designed, and I read this in the Homo Sapiens book too, so this is an opinion. This is just me messaging the information to you guys. Is we are truly designed to come from a place of lack. Yeah. You know, we're designed to not be miserable, but we're designed to always feel like right now we are unfulfilled. Again, going back to the hunters and gatherers, they didn't have food. It was always about getting the food. They're mm-hmm. always almost reaching into the future mm-hmm. to pull back. So always needing. To fulfill this desire, or for that, for there was more survival.
The only moment of satisfaction is the putting it in your mouth, the biting, the chewing, the this and that, and then the afterwards when you're like, family, we did it.
Yeah.
But that's brief. That's brief. Very because brief. Soon again, you're going to be hungry. There's going to be more danger. I got to go get more food.
Or you're already going to be thinking about the food's going to be done. And, you know, we had to feed the whole tribe of 50 people.
And you're already thinking about the next hunt.
Yep. Exactly.
Damn. So,
there.
What? What messed up? Like biology, like how shitty. We were set up for this.
What? It's the.
It's Adam and Eve, man. See what Adam had to do? He had to go get laid. What happened?
It's the this whole thing of more.
Yeah, but man.
What happens when more is enough?
You know what happens when more is enough? Do you guys do breath work?
I know breath work.
I challenge you both to bring breath work into your life. It's the only thing I say that means anything this evening.
I used to do it back in the day.
Bring it in.
I used to astral project. For like,
close your eyes. Even if it's closing your eyes and doing 5 minutes of conscious breathing and just paying attention to your breath and watching it like you're watching a movie, bring back to your breath, you'll start to notice shifts in everything. Your perspective changed my entire life, man. I mean, literally, I don't get mad now. I don't have the capability about thinking about the past. Unless I really sit down and like, all right, I want to think about this, you know? But I am so in the present moment, and it's purely because of breath work. And
it's why all these yogis in India can live to 110, 120 years old when they're eating
the same awful diet every single day. You know what I mean? Off the streets with no sanitation.
Remember my $10 a week diet?
Yeah.
I can still do it if I wanted to. I got to a point where I was eating $10 of food a week.
That's wild.
Yeah, it was primarily based on oatmeal.
Yeah.
Pancakes.
Yeah.
Oatmeal, obviously, as you would normally eat oatmeal.
Yeah.
some bananas, some beans every now and then. And some almond milk. And I did that for about a few months. Just $10 a week. Real easy. And I could do it now for sure. I could still do it. When you talk about breath work, I think that breath work, there is some a physiological thing to it, but I think that is primarily psychological, in that it forces you to just focus on one thing, which is your breath. And when you do that, you're able to subconsciously train yourself to apply that same type of concentration and focus in other things in your life, which makes you very focused.
I think it's interesting that you thought it was like psychological.
Yeah.
Because I guess that's like, it's interesting. The psychology is because of the physiological impacts.
Yeah.
So when you adjust your breath, it adjusts your heart rate. It's all like tied together like a string.
I was saying there's physiological aspects.
But even. And because of the heart rate, your neurochemistry begins to change. And so if I'm like all out of whack, or you say, Joey, like, can you slow down your breath right now? And I'm like stressed out. I'm like,
yeah.
And you say, Joey, can you slow down your breath right now? And I do it. Yeah. And I'm like chilling. Naturally, my cortisol levels are going to lower.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to begin to get more relaxed. Like, eventually, when I start to get a lot of oxygen and I take that deep breath and they tell you and hold, and you're like, and then I'm just like, oh, it's going to feel good. And sometimes in some yogi practices or breath work, you actually even do oxygen deprivation.
Yeah, I do some of that stuff.
And then you're like getting kind of high off of the CO2 acclimation.
I do breath work with
you. It's literally poisoning yourself to a degree with the CO2 acclimation, like in your body, and your brain's like, don't do it. And then you're just, but it's a good feeling, and it makes you aware because it puts you in that survival state and opens up all your capillaries and all that stuff. So it's taking advantage of these biological triggers.
But even deeper, deeper than the biological and the psychological is what yogis believed, and they've been doing it for thousands of years, is that it's not breath. Like, we see it as oxygen, you know, oxygen, carbon dioxide, you know, but what it really is it's prana. Our breath is actually life force. We would die if we did not have our breath. You know what I mean? We breathe. There's two reasons why we stay alive. Our heart beats. We don't have control of it. And our breath breathes itself. We don't have control of it, but we can control it. That's why yogis believe if you master your breath, you master your mind, you master your body, you master your life, and you elongate your life. Because if you slow down and take in deeper breaths and you control the breath, you're now taking in more of that prana, that life force, so you're extending your life longer. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is why smokers die early, because they're inhaling chemicals, slowing and constricting their breath, shutting down systems, vital organs, because the breath can't get to it in the same way, and then you die.
And you know, I think it's, I love hearing you say it that way, because I feel it's the same thing. It's like, it's the equivalent of like Christians arguing with Buddhists. I'm like, dude, Buddha was the same as Jesus. Like, it's like almost the same exact story when you read them both.
Love and energy.
And so when people say like God, and then you say the universe, I'm like, it's the same thing. Like,
it's the same
thing. When I kind of explain the neurological processes and you talk about kind of taking control of your breath, I'm like, oh, it's like our autonomic nervous system. Like, you're able to influence that and change it. And it's kind of hacking these processes, and like whether we call it our prana, or it's, you know, exercising these neurological muscles, these muscles, it's the same truth. And like, that's what I love about having these types of conversations, is we can say, you know, we can call it whatever fits you. Luis always says, what do you say, Luis? Like, do it your
best way is your way.
Yeah, the best way is your way.
I like that.
He says the best way is your way.
I'm gonna use that.
It's a good one.
That's good. The best way is your way.
Just like, you know, however you want to articulate it.
Yeah.
Freaking awesome. Like, people have the same story, but some people are gonna tell it through painting or through a song or through a picture or through a video.
Through your filter. Your filter. We all have a different filter. It's what you see. It's what you've experienced. It's what. Yeah.
Whatever your filter is, whatever your thing is, like, double down. That's like a message that's been on my heart recently. I'm like, let me figure out what my strengths are, and let me double down.
Dude, why do you think I'm here in San Diego? There was no other way. I was not coming to this meeting. I booked my flight at 4 o'clock the afternoon before it started. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, just, you go with what, and it goes back to get what I was saying before. If you're open-minded to the universe and not shut down, is coming back even to you texting me, hey, come through. We wouldn't be having this conversation right now if you didn't say, hey, come through. If I was like, man, I'm tired.
Well, this is what I've been waiting for. I've been wanting to record a conversation with us. I've been down here and talk about your experience, your journey, and to be able to kind of share it, because I've been working on this like little audio project.
Yeah.
And just recording conversations with friends and recording little reflections of myself. And you know, I've posted about 18 or maybe 20 audio clips on my channel now, and you know, I don't know.
What is this, your channel then?
It's through Anchor. It's a hosting thing site, and so I mean, it's anchor.fm/Joseph Michaels.
Okay, cool.
And yeah, I've only shared a couple of the episodes on like my Facebook page.
I was gonna say, I don't remember seeing anything. I remember seeing something, but I don't know.
I mean, it's like I said, I've only shared a couple of them, and it's not really to get like listens as much as it is just an exercise of, you know, like,
of awareness,
my voice, and your voice talk to other people and hear their stories and to kind of document it. And, you know, I might be like 87 and like listening to this conversation and being like, what? This is nuts. Like, this is what I was talking about, thinking about. I'm like, oh, dude, like, that's so cool. Like, you know, Luis, dude, I was just listening to the conversation. We were 28. I was 59 years ago.
Dude, just imagine, man.
Like, that
cars are going to be levitating. Why that's.
I'll be like, Matt was right. Robots. Cars are levitating.
You want to talk about citizens, dude. You guys haven't even brought it. We didn't even bring in robots.
AI and stuff.
AI. Dude, there's...
The
there's
biggest thing I'm going to take from this, by the way, is I wrote this down. Luis said, we're robots masked as humans who don't know we're robots. I was like, whoa.
That's fucking...
They are. But what I was going with the whole thing where it's... a lot of it is psychological breath work, is that breath work doesn't literally have to be breath work. It could be anything that trains your brain to have that type of focus.
Yes.
It could be your own art. It could be any activity that inspires you in the same way.
Yeah.
That's all
you slow down your heart rate when you're doing your art.
Yeah.
It's totally true. I mean, you might have that jerk of adrenaline because you're excited, but naturally your central nervous system is going to mellow.
When I'm editing and I'm like, I do something like that I've been trying to do for hours and I finally get it done, I get fucking jacked.
Oh, me too.
And it's as good as anything that I could do, playing any sport, doing any activity. And the fact is I can sit here at home and do it. And I have so much control over it because I can do it whenever I want.
Yeah, you can get as much serotonin supercharges as you want. It's why I do the Wim Hof breathing method in the morning.
I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's because it pushes mass quantities of oxygen into your brain. High.
It's something that you don't depend on anybody else to do.
Nope.
And you don't need anybody else to do it.
I jump into it. I do it sometimes in a cold shower too. Yeah. I do an ice cold shower.
Yeah, I do that too.
And then you get out and you can run through a wall, man. And I'm like, I have to teach this.
That sort of control is like, do something, find something that you can do just on your own. Mm-hmm. That depends on nobody else.
True.
And then if you love it, you just do it. Yeah. It's gonna, I know it did fucking, it did magic on me.
Journaling, honestly, it did yoga, fucking magic. Meditation, breath work, whatever suits it.
Yeah.
If it's healthy and you can do it, and it's raising you up and leveling you up in your life.
Yeah.
Then absolutely, I agree. Yeah. There's no better way than the way that is best for you.
When you guys talk about, you know, it slows your heart rate and it gives you that peace, I think about Alex Honnold and how he's doing insane thing ever.
I'll throw it on right now. There's a great documentary called Alex Honnold Life Coach. And it talks about him just like, this is Alex who used to be a world-class climber, but then he started getting into a bunch of other stuff, like filming and this or that.
Yeah.
And, then he's like, you know, just hanging around Alex Honnold. It's like hanging around like the ultimate life coach. He's so singularly focused that it's like, you just wonder why you're doing anything else. But
pull up this guy. I want to see this guy.
He's great.
Yeah,
and he is like doing this most extreme thing you could ever do.
I'm going to
sit here.
He's doing the most extreme thing you could ever do as a human being. Like, He has accomplished the greatest single physical human feat in human history.
What?
You're going to see.
Okay.
And I usually don't speak in finites like that, in absolutes, but zero question about this man.
Really?
And he's so calm when he does it.
Yeah, he's calm. Like,
life coach.
He's up
there. Oh, okay. I think I know who this is.
He's out there like, dude, aren't you like scared that you're climbing like 3,000 foot walls with no rope? And like, no, like, I figured like,
I follow this guy on Instagram. I think I'm pretty. It's got to be who it is.
He's out there like climbing. He's like whistling, smiling at the camera. He's like, if you're worried, there's something wrong. It's like you should never feel nervous climbing a 3,000 foot wall with no ropes.
So you should never feel nervous.
That's awesome.
I feel like so inspired now, man. Thank you guys.
Yeah.
I am so tired. I'm high though. I feel good.
This was an impromptu little audio sesh with, I thought it was Matt Shakir, but it's
Shaker.
Matt Shaker.
It probably is Shakir. If you go to the Middle East, they would say Shakir. But
Matt Shakir and Luis Baez. Matt, where can people find more of you?
Instagram at Awaken Momentum or at Yoga by Shakes is my personal page.
Yoga by Shakes.
Yoga by Shakes.
Awesome. Cool. I'll share that in the post. Thanks for talking with us today.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Later, bro.
Later.